From cradle to grave, every moment of your life is one word after another, overlapping all the words from all of those who've crossed your path in a never-ending cycle of tale and experience. The concept is simple. The guest chooses the theme, the coin is flipped, and the winner is the first to tell a story based on their chosen theme. The loser gets to share a second. There are no prizes, no contests, no rules, and no boundaries. Just a few minutes spent exchanging the narrative from moments of our own human existence. Welcome to Tell Me a Story. I am now recording.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Let me do a quick introduction.
All right. Okay.
I'm on the phone with Ethan. I'm going to say your last name wrong. Persoff.
No, you got it.
Woo!
Well done. Well done.
Well, you know, it's not that hard.
No, it's not. Yeah, I mean, it's just like person, really. I guess.
Okay, now that would have been much easier 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now I've known you about that long.
Yes, you have. Yeah. Which makes tonight's topic good.
Yeah. We used to tool around Denver quite a bit. We ran in the same circles.
That's true.
Each other at the same coffee shops. We probably lusted after the same young women.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. Wow. I mean, there were only like five of them.
At a time. Denver was beautiful. Denver had its share of beautiful women at that time. I'm sure it's still the same, too, but dang, yeah.
Well, were you a Paris on the Platte kid?
I was, and in fact, I was equally Paris and Muddy's, which I miss so much. Muddy's coffee shop.
It was the best coffee shop in the entire fucking world.
It was like a portal. Yeah, I mean, it was like a portal into a world. And, you know, there was the sense that so much of that weird kind of crazy I'm stumbling over my words, actually, trying to describe Muddy's. It was just perfect. It was a little portal of place.
Used bookstore, coffee shop, hepatitis A, B, and C.
Drugs A, B, and C, too.
Yeah.
With a chess layer in the back, which was very strange.
Yeah.
It was...
the dirtiest carpet I have ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I believe I passed out on once.
I don't even remember. Yeah, but the thing is, if you needed a place to pass out, or, you know, in Denver, and you didn't know anybody and just were covered in trash and had been going on some sort of weird drug bend for 5 or 10 days.
Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. That would be the place that would not only, you know, welcome you and give you a meal and get you a cab, you know. But no, I missed that, and I loved Paris. Paris was fantastic.
It was a little snooty.
Oh, it was. It was like the...
Hipsters probably hang out there now.
Yeah, it was like the Alex P. Keaton version to, like, I guess Michael Gross. Michael Gross would go to like Muddy's or whatever.
When I think of Muddy's, if I had to define Muddy's in one word,
right?
Brown. Everything was brown. The food was brown. The coffee cups, the tables, the carpet, the everything.
Yeah, even the air was brown.
Yeah. But that was one of the first nights I spent when I came out to Denver. It's probably about a year or so before you and I met.
Right.
We came out, and I was hanging out with a buddy that lived down in Littleton, and we went to play an open mic night in Thornton.
How'd you get on that, man? How were you able to get up onto the stage? I would think the demand...
I don't
that
know.
Evening. Yeah.
I didn't have the same critical filter of my talent or lack of that I do now.
He's just like,
let's go play an open stage. I'm like, fucking A.
I'm there. Yeah.
It was a country bar and we knew acoustic folk rock.
Right.
It didn't go well. But after, when we were trying to figure out what in the hell just happened, the first place he took me in Denver proper was Muddy's.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. And I immediately, because this is right after Thornton, where I'm like, what the hell is this place? I want to go home. Muddy's.
No, I remember. I mean, you're a lovable person, but I remember that would be your reaction to a lot of things back that time.
Yeah.
Typically, so, you know, I mean, and you'd be, I don't think you ever ended the open mic night because you always had the guitar with you.
Yeah.
And so I don't think in your mind the Thornton open mic night ever ended.
I'll tell you, it's
7 month mental thing.
I was considered myself a novelist at the time, and you can't right. just carry around, as much as I tried, you can't just carry around a notebook and impress girls.
Well, you had some Kurt Vonnegut paperbacks in your back pocket, didn't you? Or some, or am I remembering that right?
That was Joey.
Okay.
Joey, okay. I read, he had almost every Kurt Vonnegut book.
Yeah.
And when I read them, I read them in a stack from earliest published to the most recent one he had. And now, with the exception of Breakfast of Champions, which for some right. reason it sticks out to me, the rest of them are a blur of being the same long, long ass book. And I need to go back and read them again, but Joey owned them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and then, that's accurate. Let's see. And then,
mine was Kerouac.
What's that?
I was Kerouac.
Oh, that's such a revise. That there's no fucking way that you were. Yeah, okay, right. I was reading Burroughs back when I was. Yeah, no. There's bullshit. You were reading Kerouac back in that period.
That's one of the reasons why I went to Denver in the first place.
And you might have looked at Kerouac or thumbed through it, but I seriously doubt. Like, were you doing Dharma Blues or were you on the road?
No, it was on the road. Was the first Kerouac I touched.
Did you have it as a scroll in your pocket? Did you just sort of like unfurl it in a really?
No, I bought it in a Penguin trade.
Yeah, Kerouac, yeah. My ass. maybe. Okay. Going on the belief that I don't ever remember that. Maybe Ginsberg. I don't believe you were reading Kerouac. Back
I love Jack Kerouac. Well, no. It's like some of his earlier stuff. When you get into like Pick. You know,
you're just on Amazon.com, like clicking titles, right?
No,
now.
I'm kicked back. I'm looking at a bookshelf right now, it was somewhere in there. I transitioned from beat writers.
Yeah.
After I read Bukowski, I was like, fuck it. This is it.
Oh man. My gosh. Yeah.
And so, you know, I went to mystery. Started reading Dashiell Hammett and Raymond Chandler.
Scooby-Doo, probably. Really
yeah, cool. It's. I mean, that was yeah. it. It was just like I will never read a book, I think, more honest than On the Road.
Right.
I will never read a writer quite as honest as Charles Bukowski was. And considering the ingestion of substances, he really hit a note with me, because when I was reading Kerouac, I was still in Utah and we were drinking. And so that sparked me, and I'm like, I've got to get to Denver. And then I read a Westword article months after I moved there, find out maybe 6 months tops Kerouac spent.
Yeah.
Now, don't get me wrong. I didn't want to be Jack. I wanted to be Neil Cassidy.
Well, you know, I want to touch on Bukowski in a moment. This is a fun conversation, but while we're still talking about Paris and Muddy's, you know, it wasn't until I got out of Denver that I realized that the center of the universe – in terms of what I care about, what I think about, was across the fucking street from Paris on the Platte. That bar,
my brother's,
my brother's bar.
Yeah.
With sort of like these Stanley Kubrick type bartenders that have always been, you know, like the Overlook Hotel, like how long you've been working there. I've always been the bartender, sir, you know, and I don't know, you could probably do a better job describing the history of, my brother's bar, but are you aware of like the, of course I'm guessing you're aware of the Kerouac Cassidy stuff with that, right?
Yeah. And the IOUs in frames on the wall. But to be honest, most of what I remember about my brothers was going in there and drinking, Hefeweizen by the pitcher and not knowing how the hell I got home.
Well, I mean, that's wonderful about Denver. I mean, and I'd like to really give a big nod of pride and everything to Denver right now, and you know, for the last year with pot and everything, but
yeah,
my golly, but
well, like it was hard to get before.
that's actually very it's a valid point, but
no thanks, I don't want it. No, I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah No, but I mean, hey, I hate I hate buying. Absolutely, I cannot stand buying it. For me, it becomes a Costco run for me. I try and buy for like 6-8 months at a time. I don't like I would easily pay 3 to 4 times market if I could just go to a counter
Yeah.
You know, buy it and walk away. So, I mean,
well, because otherwise it's possession with intent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but well, it's always with intent, you know, not to intent to get high.
Yeah.
But no, but congratulations, Denver. I think that's amazing. But that, yeah, so that Kerouac Cassidy connection right there was fascinating. And then I found out that Denver at one point was, and I might have this wrong, but I think in the 20s, it was the opium center of North America.
I think you're right. I think I read that.
And, you know, then Naropa is kind of silly. I mean, every crazy woman I ever met, pardon me to any of those, but ever met was taking a class at Naropa at one point. But then I found, but then I find out, you know, that Naropa is this fabulous, fabulous school. That has the Allen Ginsberg stuff. In fact, there's a wonderful book with a horrible title called When I Was Cool, which is a book of the very first Jack Kerouac School for Poetics student. Huh. And it's very funny because it's one student and he's got Ann Waldman, Allen Ginsberg, Greg Corso, maybe Burroughs was there too with his son, and that's really sad. But they were all his teachers, and it was their first opportunity being teachers and everything. And it's a horrible title, but a really, really crazy book about, you know, I guess Boulder and Denver back at that time.
I just wrote that down.
Yeah, when
I'm
cool.
Going to read the book with the silly name.
Yeah, it's got it really dumb. I mean, if I had that experience, I wouldn't have sort of like this shrug about myself, you know, and sort of be like, yeah, I was okay then, you know, or something. But yeah, Denver. Yeah. Denver. Fabulous. Fabulous place.
So
yeah,
you and I,
I'm sorry. Sorry. I will connect all tangents. The Bukowski thing that you mentioned.
Yes.
I had the benefit of coming into, actually I should refer, I don't want to say coming into Bukowski, but, pardon, of reading him later than the other, you know, sort of new writers or whatever that you group him with. And I also didn't get in Bukowski from like Tom Waits or any of, I had a really horrible experience in my 20s, and I went to the bookstore and I just randomly picked a book, and it was the collection of, I think, Last Day on Earth, if something is. That sounds like the title, Last Day on Earth poems or something. And and
now
yeah,
I'm going to
reading
Amazon.
At that point in your life, it was just, and then to hear his actual voice, that beautiful kind of perfume type way of talking that I had a good 5 years with Bukowski's writing. Absolutely. My golly. Yeah.
He was, now I, as I go back, okay, hang on. I gotta finish introducing you.
Hmm.
And then we'll
Please,
reminisce,
yeah.
And then we have to do the story shtick, and then we can go back to bullshitting because this is fantastic.
Yeah, no, right.
You are the proprietor of EP.TC.
Yes. Yeah.
That is your website that still to this day confuses the shit out of me.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
I'd love it. Now, you and I have a friend in common who's currently in Minnesota, the poor bastard.
Right.
And I popped him the question yesterday. I said, just real quick, the fuck does Ethan do? Because I'm on his website, and I am more confused now than I was 5 years ago when I first found it.
Oh,
and he's
that's
like,
great.
He says, yeah. I don't know.
And he actually, I think, for a living, a very well-paid living, analyzes websites and tells people what their websites are. So
Well,
then
what the fuck else would get him to Minnesota? I went there for a girl. He went there for money.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything else because it's certainly not the climate.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. He said that I would like a barren, cold, Iceland-like place with no sun for 9 months.
Iceland's I think, temperate.
Right. And they have good music.
It's got more. Yeah. It's got more ocean.
Yeah.
I was in Minnesota for 3 years, and I got to tell you, it wasn't the 20 to 40 below that ran me out. It was the humid summers.
Yeah.
I was just absolutely not used to it. And I'm such a pasty redhead that the minute the humidity gets above 30%, I'm pointless. That's why when all you assholes moved to Texas, I didn't go with you.
Oh, you're totally welcome to come though.
But it's humid there. And it's also Texas.
It's actually dry, you know, but it's oven heat. The very first summer that I moved here, it does require a lot of acclimating, and I love how much we're sticking to this introduction. This is
I can't.
Neither can I. Because I got to point this out. The very first time I moved to Austin, which is one of the best cities on the planet.
Yes.
But thank love Austin's heat, because even though I guess they say that 100 people, new people move every day, our population goes up by about 100 every day.
Wow.
The summer will cut your ass. It'll just beat the shit out of you. Pardon me. But then after 8 years, whatever part of your brain that felt it no longer does. Because it just singes those nerves off. But the very first summer that I went here.
It's a lot of years, man.
Yeah. No, I know. It's, you know, it takes, you know, if you love something, commit to it, you know. But the very first year that I was here, I had never experienced a summer like this, even though I've been in Chicago, which has its share of really sticky, hot weather. And but Denver is just, you know, fellatio regarding like weather during the summer. I mean, you get this beautiful day and then it always rains at 4 o'clock and you know, Denver is amazing. But I was not prepared for Texas. And I remember this like a Looney Tune. The third week that I was here was the hottest day on record at that time. And it was 111 and our air conditioning went out. And I just yelled randomly at people. I saw what madness was because I was so furious that, and the actual water in my skull was heated.
Yeah.
I could feel, you know, my body was itself cooking. And I just screamed at people. I would call people long distance. That's when we had long distance.
I remember that.
Yeah. Just to tell people off, just, you know, and I would think that I was like going to call and tell them, I got this funny story about the weather. But then the minute my jaw would open up to talk about it, I would just, you know.
Basically, you were, part of your reptile brain was sensing the end, and you wanted to make sure that all accounts were closed.
Right, right. Fight or flight, right? And so then, just like a Looney Tune, the next day, that 111 clicked 1 to 112, just, you know, just to 112. And I went nuts. But now, you know, I think I've had heat index 135 days, and... You know, I love it. The trick, and I know I'm helping out your introduction here. If anybody's taking notes, if you want anything other than any value to come from listening to this, the trick is to have your air conditioning go out on your car, because, and then to drive through a couple summers with no air conditioning. And eventually I think that's why I now am fully acclimated to the heat.
Now, and as the whole purpose of this is to hear your story and counter with a story. When I went out to Minnesota, now coming out from Denver, or to Denver from Utah, Denver's kind of humid compared to Salt Lake City. We get above 15% humidity and it's something. I mean, we talk about it on the news, the way California is like, oh my God, it's 50, break out your parkas. So, you know, the first time I left Colorado to go to Minnesota, it was a blizzard. We called it blizzard conditions. We were dropping about 8 inches. I was wearing combat boots, cut off shorts, and a flannel to keep warm.
Yeah. I remember that.
I got out of the car, later after taking a northern hike. I think it was in Grand Rapids and felt like the skin was on fire from the cold.
Right.
It was so fucking cold. I'd never felt that. And
wait, hold on. Let me give you the setup. How cold was it?
It was really fucking cold. and so I did that. And then I ended up moving out there. I'm like, you know what? I put on a pair of pants. I'll be fine. I'll get a warm jacket and I'll be fine.
You basically dressed just like a roadie for Pearl Jam at the time, right?
Well, you quit going outside. That's what it is. Okay. Yeah. And so I told this girl I was involved with that I, you know, I would totally move out there. And I did. And I went out late March. And somewhere in the middle of April, I had my first 90-some-odd% humidity day.
We're in Denver now when this happened?
No, I'm in Minnesota. And okay. I've got that little piece of shit S10 Blazer of mine. No air conditioner, never had one before, never needed it in Colorado. I had an absolute breakdown. I pulled over to the side of the road and just wept like a little kid whose puppy just died.
Until you cried.
I was weeping.
Like, when you cry,
yeah,
is this because you know the truth and magnitude of life is finally caught up to you, and you're having like sort of like a realization? You're really frustrated.
No,
or
I felt like
whining?
My brain was leaking out of my ears.
Let me give you the other category. Or were you just whining?
It's not. I was honestly emotionally could not wrap my head around what I was feeling. Yeah. And wow. A cop pulled over. He had seen my Colorado plates. Cop pulls over. I am not on a road with a curb. I am stopped in a lane.
Right.
But I pulled over to the outside lane. He pulls over and he walks up. He's like, hello there. I'm like, he's like, you're new in town, eh? And I'm like, holy fuck, it's so wet.
I never knew you did impressions. This is, I'm hearing Minnesota come
it's,
right through.
Oh, dude, it sticks. Yeah. It's like a virus. Yeah. And so he had me follow him to a grocery store, and he walked me into the deep freeze and had me sit down for 10 minutes to get my shit together. And he just sat there with me. It's going to be okay, sir. You're going to be, fine.
Was this public assistance, or was this like what they do
I
by
just
law?
Think
by
he just
law? Like,
took pity on me.
Wow.
But I never got used to it. Three summers I was out there, and it was like coming out of that third winter.
Oh, you know,
I'm like,
I didn't
can't
catch that you actually lived in Minnesota for 3 summers. I think you mentioned it, but
yeah.
I don't think I was paying attention.
No, there was a girl involved. I do lots of stupid things for girls, as we will talk about when we get to our theme this evening.
Oh, I'm excited about the theme. I mean, okay, so basically the quick introduction, so let's just get through it. I have a website.
Yeah.
I do comics.
Yes.
I do do some music on the site. Both of those are on the site. Also on the site is a bunch of documents and a bunch of art projects. One archive incomplete of Paul Krassner's The Realist, which I both found every single issue that wasn't available and scanned and digitized that. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
I've been doing the website since about 2001. But really with any earnest since 2005. And let's see, what other points of introduction would you need?
Well,
brown hair.
That covers
balding.
It. You can grow a magnificent beard.
Oh, thank you.
You,
yeah,
I mean, I have beard envy when I have seen pictures of your beautiful, beautiful beard. And as I recall, you are married. Yes.
Yes, I am.
And your wife is ridiculously pretty.
Oh, thank you. She's gorgeous. I love her very much. And
like a bastard.
Two cats.
Oh.
Let's see. No air conditioning in my car. Bicycle. I'm right now talking to you from my studio with a bunch of electronic friends and which are much easier to maintain.
Yes.
Than real life friendships and bunch of books, bunch of records.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
So the last time you and I saw each other was in Denver in 2008 at the Democratic National Convention.
That was so good.
It was so random. It wasn't nearly enough time.
No, I agree.
Because you have always been, and I'm not kissing ass just because you're on the phone with me now, but you've always been, honestly, a person that every time I look back, I feel guilty we didn't spend a lot of time together.
Oh, that's
because we always had friends in the middle.
Yeah, no, I think we were instant friends and also instant animosity. I mean, I think we both thrived in our teens, 20s on pissing off either other people or each other.
Yeah.
And so there was a bond there that was very quick.
Yes.
And
I met you through Nate, whom I refused. I met you through Nate.
Right.
Whom I refused to call Ix. I never will.
I was about to say, because I don't know if it's fair to speak about that with recording. You might want to do a couple beeps, but like, I go by Nine now, and I hate that. And in fact, there's a very funny prank that when he changed his name, I think it was right when he was still living with me.
Uh-huh.
Or it was still in the point where I was ridiculing it, which ended 4 years ago.
I've never stopped.
Oh yeah. And well, I also feel bad for making a Naropa joke because his beautiful, wonderful sister that went to Naropa, if she's gotten this far into this recording, I was not referring to her as like that.
No, of course not.
Girl. Yeah, no. Beautiful, beautiful person.
That's Zena, and, right?
Yes, who also is of an X name that she's not given at birth.
I always liked her.
Hmm?
I always liked her.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she made sense going from her previous name to that name. Perfect sense. Nate going to nine or X makes no sense. But what is hilarious, and he was so mad at me, more not so much for the prank, but I'll tell you right after the prank why he was so upset.
Okay.
He was a terrible roommate in Chicago in terms of utilities and infrastructure and the basic requirements that you have normally when two people get an apartment as roommates, one will take care of one utility or something, or setting up the lease. The other person will cover the other stuff. He basically just showed up. And so I got to set up all the utilities and had to deal with the landlord and everything. I'm sure he will claim otherwise, but but Allison might agree with me. And, sorry, but anyway, so I registered our name with Meritech, which was the Chicago, Mountain Bell or AT&T or whatever. So I registered our phone line.
Yeah.
And they said, and I said, okay, well, you know, Ethan Persoff and, Ix. And the woman goes, well, I can't just put Ix. And also I'm paying $5 extra to get in the directory by choice. And so I figure I'm paying it. I'm going to do it. I go, okay, well, how about last name Bob? And so, so it's Ix Bob. And I have the white pages where you go up to Bob. He's the only Bob in town. Bob, Ix. And I have our calling card that says Ix Bob on it. And what made him so upset was that I made Bob the last name. Because nobody will ever find Ix. And you know, if I'd done Bob Ix, he probably would have been delighted, but nobody will ever look up Ix, you know.
Ix, it's a long Bob.
A lot of pages in between that. But I loved it. Bob,
I love it too. That's what he gets for picking a stupid name.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I call him
but
Nate.
But it's the most successful name I know. I know nobody else that has succeeded like that.
No.
And it's all because of, you know, people are just baffled. You know, with a name like that, he's got to be brilliant or something, you know, or something. But
well, he was so pretty at that age.
Oh, my golly. You know, he's still an attractive guy. This is the longest introduction I've ever had. But, it would probably not do well to describe how goth and silly I was at that time. Although I felt very magnificent in high school with, makeup and prom gloves and boots and stupid ass shit. But like, if I see a photo of that, I feel inclined to laugh at myself pretty quick. Just like I'm saying, you were a Pearl Jam roadie at the time with the beautiful hair that you kind of, you know, knocked back and forth. I bet you still kind of look at that photo.
You know, I missed the hair.
Yeah.
But I missed the hair because girls really liked the hair.
Yeah.
It was a pain in the ass.
Well, I remember, I don't even know why I volunteered the whole goth details, but like that was still a proud moment. I felt more tough at that point in my life than any moment of my life. You know, the funniest short story would be walking in the Martin Luther King Day parade with a bunch of girls thinking that I was, that's a long, long story, but basically just walking away from the MLK parade. And this was the year after the Klan had a couple of riots downtown.
I remember that.
Yeah. Cause Denver had the KKK, white power problem back then.
Yeah.
The economy had sagged. But I just remember walking from that parade. I think I had blue something on it, or I can't remember what my hair color was, but we were walking and I had like fishnets, like arm length fishnets or something. And we just gone through this great, you know, we shall overcome parade, and we're right in Five Points and these five or six guys are walking past us. And I was of this mind that, you know, everybody is everybody, you know, or whatever, we're all one. And I remember the right as we passed them, any other day, the sense would have been to respect this neighborhood and go on to the other side of the street. Not even be frightened of you know, aggressive looking people based on the color of their skin. But in certain neighborhoods, you just defer. You just go over to the other side of the street, you know?
Yeah.
And I just remember gravity stopping and the earth continuing to rotate and the back of my head flying onto the ground. And it's because somebody had just like punched me in my face as we walked past him.
Deesh.
And that's not really my story, but that's just my Denver memory right there. And I just remember that being a real big, like, life lesson, you know, because I don't even know the value of that. I don't know the moral. Do you have any moral for that?
You know, yeah. And it's something oddly that I'm trying to teach my kids. And that is that
don't be an idiot.
No, my kids could be as dumb as they want, but it's no matter how good you are at anything you choose to do, no matter how good things are going in any given day, there is always the possibility that you're going to spontaneously combust. And there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it, no matter how hard you try. So you worry about the shit you can worry about. Everything else is minutia. And if you spend your life bogged down in minutia, you're just going to be miserable. And for your moral, and sometimes you get punched in the back of the head. Yeah. But the moments before that were pretty fucking good.
Right. No. Yeah. And then I think you can actually effectively spontaneously combust with a bag, pack of Mementos and like a 2 liter of Diet Coke. If you just sort of consume that, it will, you know.
Hey, it's another good reason not to drink Diet Coke.
Oh my gosh. I don't drink any of that crap. Although I'm on a huge bad habit with kombucha, I probably spend a good $1,000 a year on that shit.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, well, you know, you can't move to Austin without having really passionate views of kombucha.
Is it a tea?
Yeah, good guess. So you do know. It's a fermented tea. It kind of looks like a David Cronenberg prop.
Okay.
They call it a SCOBY. It's a mushroom that you feed black tea and sugar. And as an organism, it shits the tea through itself. And that's what you drink. And people call it a panacea. They call it a cure-all. They call it this. People are very. I personally used to have sour stomach and a bunch of other things, and a lot of personal problems have been cleared up by
drinking the mushroom poop.
Yeah, you know, yeah, without a doubt. I think it's the best. It's the best.
Okay.
Hold on one second. Let my cat out.
What does it taste like?
No, what does it taste like?
Yeah.
It depends on what you're able to find.
Because I know wheatgrass is good for me, but it tastes like grass, and I've never appreciated that flavor. So
yeah.
What does mushroom poop taste like?
Okay, so if wheatgrass is kind of I'm trying to think if wheatgrass as a entry point for your palate is too much, then you might not be the best target audience for kombucha, but I
want a panacea.
Well, it's a great panacea. It's also a terrific hangover cure. And, it also, what it does is it sends billions of organisms into your intestines. And after like 3 years or whatever, you know, it's just, it's beautiful down there every time. It's just a beautiful, beautiful, that's probably a little scatological, but it's just, it's
poop talks fine if you call it scatological.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I'm classifying it.
Everybody scatologics.
Yeah. What you're doing is you're sending about a billion sea monkeys into your intestines every day when you drink a bottle of it.
Like the Scrubbin' Bubbles.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Like the Scrubbin' Bubbles. You called it.
Love those guys.
Yeah.
Do not want them up my bits.
I want a recording of just that one snippet that love those guys. Have you ever done any ad work or anything?
Me? Yeah. Yes, I have.
I can totally see that. Yeah. Because that was good.
Only voiceover stuff.
Yeah, love those guys.
Unlike you, panacea drinking Austinite, I got fat. So I got married and got fat.
No, you didn't.
No, I'm seriously fat. I mean, I'm not like round, but I am super out of shape. So now I'm looking for something. Okay. You know what? We are now 35 minutes in. We still haven't talked about the topic.
Oh, great.
So the theme that you picked for tonight was?
Acid stories.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Acid stories.
Okay. Now,
and we're not talking about the antacid stories or stomach stories, even though that would be a funny point from the
computer. If it was mushroom stories, I would be able to combine all of it. Because mushrooms was the night I lost my asshole.
Well, did you ever find it?
Well, later, yeah, the next day, sure. But
you you mean you literally
could not find it.
Okay.
And it was.
I can't really top that, except that the last time I did mushrooms, I did it included with the acid story that I'm prepared to tell you. I started to get into this habit of doing these things alone. So setting up elaborate contact safe help or whatever. And I had a friend in Minnesota, conveniently, a darling woman, still there, who was my safe call if I needed it through AOL Instant Messenger.
Sure.
But what's wonderful about that is there was a transcript, because I needed to talk to her throughout a lot of it. And there was one point, and I love this story, but I was fascinated with Thom Yorke at the time. I no longer am, but I was fascinated with him. And there was one. Oh, you know what? I'm going to actually censor myself. I don't think I can give you my Thom Yorke stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, but that was a very I had this extremely funny conversation with Thom Yorke in a defaming way to Thom Yorke. Yeah, but the transcript of that is very, very funny. But you wanted, yeah, so I thought for my theme that acid stories are great. And I have a pretty good one from my last one, the last time I did acid. So I would love to do an acid story.
Let's do it. Tell me a story.
Okay, let me actually, I printed out your instructions. If we were to, first pick a topic or theme.
You got that.
Intros and backgrounds. That's what you're doing. Okay.
Okay,
right here you go. Then I say, Ethan, tell me a story.
Ethan, tell me a story.
And you tell me a story based on the theme you pick. Yeah. As soon as possible, please. Oh, that, okay. All right. So... for me, I guess my story, which I don't think I've ever really told many people, is the last time I did acid. And I guess, but also I would love, I don't know which one I would want to tell first, because we have a story, you and I, one of the first times I ever did acid. And I don't know if you,
is it the night of the Mickey Mouse glove?
Yes. The Mickey Mouse glove.
God, what was her name? Stacy?
Well, we can't really, we probably should be polite, and you should probably edit that out.
But, Sarah?
What?
Samantha?
No, that sounds good, yeah.
Gwendolyn?
Yeah, it was Gwendolyn.
Okay, Gwendolyn.
Yeah, that's the best thing when you're trying to, like, cover up a name. Do something even more, you know, less plausible than that. Like,
right.
Kola Keisha, wasn't her name?
Yeah.
But that one's a funny one in that... It was just a pure, you know, group acid experience, with the exception of you orbiting around everybody, sort of disgusted. Because I don't know, if, I can't remember. I think you were, I don't know if you were on acid that night.
Oh, I was.
Okay.
Oh, I was.
Well, what I loved, though, is that the whole night we've been playing, you know, Coil and Skinny Puppy, and just, you know, this was during the time of, like, great, great industrial music. And... the night ebbed and flowed and got to the end. We all were very hungry, and you provided the actual skill to make noodles. I remember that. I wasn't in any state to cook at that point, but you were so furious with everybody for the music. Are you remembering this?
I do. Yes, this night is very clear to me still.
Yeah. And so,
you guys listen to weird shit to me.
You were listening to Cat Stevens at the time really intensely and really, I mean,
there's a reason.
Really sentimentally. It's okay. Sorry.
Kiri Winkler. Do you remember Kiri?
No. Oh, wait.
She was the redhead waitress down at Paris on the Platte.
Oh, my God. Yes.
And holy I shit, was
oh, God.
so
oh.
stupid in love with her.
Oh yeah, yeah. And, I could tell you about the Paris girls that I was in love with.
Well, go back. So there I am making noodles.
Yeah, and everybody wants your noodles, and you come up and you slide. This was a cassette era. You come up and you slam on the cassette drive, and you go, "Listen, you motherfuckers! I've been listening to your goddamn stupid ass music all fucking night. And if you want some fucking noodles, slam into the cassette drive. You're listening to some my. You're listening to what I want." And it was such an angry, angry moment. You were deathly furious.
There is no way I said motherfucker.
And so there is nothing better to juxtapose that than. Oh, what a beautiful day. You know, like, I think when you fucking press play, it was a good guitar in. So it wasn't even, you know, it was just Cat Stevens and you. You're going to fucking listen to my fucking music. Slam. But it, you know, it just immediately calmed down. And you went and you took a little fork and spoon. You started to whisk up some hollandaise sauce or something. Or, I mean, you just were turned into Betty Crocker.
It was lemon pepper and butter on egg noodles.
Oh,
it was the easiest shit in the world for me to make because anybody could eat it.
Right.
You know, the only, we didn't know that gluten was a thing to be, as I recall, maybe somebody did. I didn't. But yeah, no. It was one of my biggest points of disgust. And I will freely admit that I was a pompous jackass back then.
Right.
Even though I am still delighted by myself.
Did I screw up? Was I supposed to go, no, you were great, or no, you weren't an asshole at that point?
No. I was a total dick. And,
okay,
and
good.
Anybody
good.
Who says okay. different, I was probably trying to get in their pants. So,
yeah,
because the girls thought I was very nice. But no, I just, it was, I always looked at, there was a certain almost religious fervor around LSD.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, we're segueing in. Good. Go.
Yeah,
go,
and
go.
It was so, everybody took it so seriously. And and I took it recreationally. I took it because I didn't like the taste of beer.
Right,
so
instead
of getting drunk, which was sloppy and messy, I'm just like, you know, I'll just take some of this. And there was a good period of my life in my 20s where that was almost my daily routine.
Bullshit.
Yeah, we were buying
fucking
it all the
bullshit.
Time.
Reading Jack Kerouac every day, acid. This is a myth that you're creating.
You talk to, you know, I can't say his name because apparently we're not doing that.
Well, okay, we can say, you know, but no, that sounds like nonsense. And then you're going to, at least you're honest about the butter. Buttercream.
I still make
salt.
That. I make that for my kids.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, let me give you my damn acid story because you're recording. And okay, so this is, I mean, but that's a beautiful sentiment that you were probably taking acid. It was probably bunk ass shit that you were taking every day for.
It made me very, very ill.
I know that I know people like Bleep and Bleep used to take, go to high school very regularly tripping. I have never tripped with the frequency of more than, I mean, the closest I ever came was like a month apart.
Yeah, mine was usually once or twice a week.
Yeah. Okay. So, but what I would like to give you as a story, and I think it's a fun acid story, is the last time I took acid, which for the sake of I mean, let's say it's about 10 years ago, I guess, maybe 5-10 years ago. And it had been, as a setup, I was extremely upset at this point in my life, you know, and I had sort of had a creative plateau of some sort. I had a couple personal tragedies that I'm still kind of calculating or trying to figure out. And I mean, it was just the bottom. I'd lost all my friends. You didn't call, for example.
All you guys went to Chicago and then went to Texas. I had no idea where anybody was.
Yeah, so this is in Texas. This is recently when I'm in, and nobody's there. In fact, and the funny thing about moving to Austin, I will say, is Nate campaigned. Name is no longer Nate, so we can say Nate all we want.
Yeah.
Nate campaigned for me to move to Austin for 5-10 years. And then I finally did. And the day I moved there, I went to a dinner with him and Joe and a bunch of other people. And they all said, you know, the traffic sucks. We're leaving. And that's truthfully what happened. And then Nate like took off. And
well, Joe's still the down story. There, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Nate, such an ass. But anyway, so my, let's say I think I was 30. I was really getting into all this stuff that you'll find on the website. And I think I was reading sort of drug pornography like Acid Dreams. I was reading Ken Kesey again, but getting him, you know, or whatever you want to say. And I even read that Tom Wolfe book, that awful.
The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test.
Yeah. What a phony. But but it's true. Come on.
I'm totally with you. I read that book on LSD.
Yeah.
And did not like it, but I finished it.
Well, yeah, oh no, yeah, it's yeah. I mean, it's great. It's like a 400-page New Yorker article. You know, it's it's perfect. but anyway, at one point I started to, you know, in a very real way, emotionally, I was failing. I was spinning out. And I also was drinking way too much, and which never really screws me up so much as it just screws my body up. Like I was feeling ill really badly, and
yeah.
So part of that also started to read about, you know, the pro drug propaganda where they, you know, there's that great story that, you know, if LSD had been around for 4 more years legally, we would probably not have alcoholism anymore because they were that close, that close to curing it. And, which sounds like hokum, but basically yeah. the fable being that LSD, was one of the few habitual changing drugs where people could stop smoking or could give up heroin, but more specifically could give up, you know, heavy lifestyle problems like alcoholism. And because those sorts of problems are triggered in the part of the brain that you're able to, you know, mechanically mess with when you're on acid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was obsessed with the idea of sort of, self-operating at that point too. And so I decided, you know, after taking mushrooms a bunch and it not doing anything, it was basically, you know, mushrooms to acid. I've always thought the good corollary is it's like beer to liquor, right? You know?
Yeah. Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah. You know, thank you. And so, I decided, well, I need to get some acid. And finding acid when you're 30 is extremely difficult. And you want to hate every experience you ever had when you're 18, even probably 29. I bet, you know, 18, 19, 17, you know, finding acid is, it's as easy to get like a sexually transmitted disease as it is to get acid.
You look like a schmuck.
Yeah. I embarked on some very funny exercises to try and find acid. First, I would go to, you know, just I thought I would go to like some electronic clubs, you know. And what's so funny is the week before I'd been to these same clubs, but I wasn't looking for anything. And I completely fit in. But suddenly being a guy who's going there to try and find acid, it just would not. I mean, I look like grandpa. You know, yeah. And I couldn't find anybody. I remember asking and sort of feeling my mouth moving, you know, and knowing what I sounded like and not, and, just feeling like Doogie Howser or something. It went very wrong. But at that point I became kind of also really interested in getting good acid, like real acid, because I went, as with anybody who's fascinated with finding acid, but can't buy any yet at the time, you go to like Arrowhead, you go online to all these sites and you read about, you know, acid today, and you find out about all these different kinds of acid that
I'm going to the Google right now.
Yeah, Arrowhead has a bunch of it. Yeah, there's scary ecstasy now that'll kill you. I tell you, we had a good run in our
you
20s.
Could take anything pretty much. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I was about to make a really terrible joke that says you could probably take AIDS back then and it wouldn't have killed you.
Oh my God! Fucking
it was really
funny.
Clean. It was clear. It was pure.
Yeah, we had the good AIDS.
Yeah,
so kids these days with your
way
weird
past
AIDS.
83 that we're talking about that. I mean, but anyway, Jesus. Yeah. So, without going into much detail, I finally found a good old Texas source. You know, and it took 5 months. And I actually offered a finder's fee to the people who helped me. So instead of like $4 a hit, it was like I still had the $4 a hit, but I also gave, you know, like $50 or $100 to anybody who could find me it.
Yeah.
And of course, two people found it at the same time, and I honored it. So it was like, I mean, just for one night, it ended up being like, you know, in the hundreds. But that's what's funny, because that's how much acid should cost. Acid should really cost like, you know, $200-$300. The fact that it's this extremely inexpensive, beautiful drug adds to its, you know, fantastic allure or whatever. But what it does to you, I mean, that's some heavy stuff. And so that was a really long description about how I finally was able to get some very clean, good, Amazon.com certified, you know, 5-star acid. You know, and it had taken like 7 months. And in that time, I had gotten even more serious about like, okay, I wanted to combat my alcoholism or possible alcoholism. I want to have a solid conversation with myself about my work. I want to figure out what I'm doing. And I became all the more invested in doing it alone, even though I think I came into like 10 hits at once or something. And so I started to read up, you know, all the things about set and setting, all the shit that I never did, you know, when I was in college or high school. You know,
right.
I mean, basically set and setting was you walk into a room, somebody says, open your mouth, and they put a tab in your mouth. And then seven hours later, Jeff Bell's smashing on a cassette player telling everyone if they want noodles to listen to Cat Stevens. That was basically how you did acid back then. And you still go by Jeff, right?
I do.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Because I never know if like the...
My gym, name's Zanfear.
Talk about stupid-ass names. Talk about stupid names. What's this gym thing?
JM. Because JeffBell.com was already taken. That's it.
Okay.
The JM Bell is, it's my initials, and it was an available website.
Okay, that's
one.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
And not to be scatological, but would you ever take a jowl movement as like...
No.
That dropped like a brick, didn't it?
Jowl movement's pretty much what happens when I hop. Now,
I'm sure you're beautiful. Come to Austin. We'll feed you real food. You'll do fine.
Yeah, I'm out here in casserole land.
Yeah. Oh my God. But you are doing a service to the country, being a liberal and a Democrat in that very, very weird suburb of Las Vegas.
I'm ready to go.
Get out. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
You got an inflatable mattress. But anyway, so I finally have my stuff. I finally, so much work has gone into it that it's suddenly a vacation that I'm planning. Right. Like, so I take like 4 days off from work. I'm planning it. The day before I am to do my acid that will cure my problems and focus me creatively and solve my alcohol issues and connect me to my past, allow me to dream again, cry, everything. I've got actually a list of goals, right? You know, I want to go so deep under that I have this list that I can play like telephone operator in my head and just sort of completely rewire everything. And so prior to that, though, I decide, well, we're going to make this a really great room. And so I hit up Party City, Target, I think Costco, anything that is, you know, able to be reflective and funny and projected. You know, I mean, I also buy a case of Sunny Delight for any, you know, for any feds who are monitoring my credit card activity that day, you know.
It's not even real juice.
But,
oh would love
it. Vitamin C. And then I bought like powdered vitamin C and I would just make these vitamin C cocktails.
Yeah.
It tastes like acid though. I dare you to have a Sunny Delight right now and not.
I can't touch it.
You will feel like you're tripping. It tastes exactly like acid. Just the same way that Red Bull tastes like acid.
Honestly, all it does is make me nostalgic. It makes me sad that I'm old and fatter and look like a cop now.
Oh, well, just wait 7 months with my plan here. You too can get some acid. 7 months, $300.
I can't wait to go to Party City.
I don't even remember what I got. I just wanted, you know, polygons. It just doesn't matter. What's that?
I said it doesn't matter.
Yeah, sorry. I'd rather, the fact that you went there
and that so far in your setup, mm-hmm. I'm delighted because I can track your thought processes to this point.
Yeah, thank you.
So absolutely you, with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So I'm going to trip alone. I'm going to set this up. I've got a couple people that are, you know, safe delegates if I need to call. And I guess at like 4 o'clock that night, I just take two hits and, I am so happy. I'm so delighted, you know, and I'm waiting and I'm trying not to dilute it because basically, especially if I'm trying to alcohol, you know, deal with my alcohol problems at that point. My first reaction I remember was basically just to make a couple bourbons while I'm waiting for it to kick in. But that,
yeah, as you do.
And yeah, as one should, but I didn't. And I was very good. And long story short, about maybe 4 or 5 hours later, I am a Korean woman mm-hmm. Sitting in a laundromat for about 20 minutes, feeling the dryer going. And that's when I realized that I'm peaking. I'm like a 4 foot tall Korean woman. I'm not lying. I found my spirit animal. It's a laundromat operator. I remember just sitting there because I was just waiting. Normally when you're tripping, what people don't really point out is that there's a lot to be said for having a bunch of cacophonous other shit happening.
Yeah.
Because if you're just waiting and you're going, you end up slowly kind of going into a meditation of your own and you end up, if I'm to tell you, you end up a Korean woman in the laundromat, you know, 4.5 feet tall. But I really liked it for a minute, you know, and I remember telling a friend this and they mentioned that there was probably a Korean woman in the neighborhood who was in a Jungian way, suddenly, you know, a 5'8" Jew, you know, we were swapping, right?
She was having a rough fucking night then.
Yeah, she suddenly felt so fussy.
Why is this ham sandwich making me feel so bad?
Oh, no, but it was so... So anyway, so then I looked up, and Party City, Costco, Target, Room just became Carnival Town, right? And I was just in the back room of this house, and it was just... fantastic to the point where now if I look at any of those things that I kept, they're still like shaking around like cartoons. Yeah. I mean, it was, I got this, kid's broom that had, eyes where the, it's like a push broom and the eyes mm-hmm. are right by the horizontal wood of the broom. And then the bristles, you know, are like green and it's just smiling and talking to me. And the whole room is just having the best time. And then I realized, you know, I should play some music.
7 hours in.
I'm sorry, what?
7 hours in.
Yeah, realized. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I realized I should probably play some music. And so I did. And then it even, you know, gotten even better. And so I believe very strongly that I've had like the greatest personal acid moment of my life. It was pure. There was no complications. The Korean woman was definitely some sort of realization that I never thought about myself. And around 2 a.m., I've had just this perfect mental and visual evening. And so I'm starting to feel like, you know, well, I'm probably going to start to get sleepy, so I should probably have just a little pot and sort of coast down into the night. So I remember, pot is a funny one with me because even now, and I love marijuana, but even now that first hit always, I just releases whatever tension I have for that week or that month or however long it's been since I smoked. It just waits until I'm high and I get just this very anxious, like 20 seconds, right? Where I'm both paranoid and horrified and very unsure and everything. So I'm thinking I'm just going to smoke some pot and just sort of sail into the night very comfortably, because I clearly have peaked, right? And I mean, the broom was talking to me, you know, and the room is still glowing. And,
sure.
So I take that hit and I suddenly feel my brain start to inflate like a balloon, like, you know, and I'm feeling the anxiety that I've always felt, but it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And I'm like, okay, well, what do I do normally? I just pour a bourbon and then I just like take a bourbon, a big, nice, nice bourbon. And my brain, to describe alcohol has always been just like a quick cure. It'll just like, hey, hold on. Hey, the cats are suddenly fighting while I'm giving this discussion. But alcohol has always just been nothing but a cure to me, right? I mean, any mood, just take a sip and I'm good. And so, pardon me for getting distracted there for a moment. My brain is inflating more and more and more. And I put down a really stiff, like probably 3 or 4 finger bourbon. And it's just like apple juice, like no hit, nothing. Right. I don't even feel anything. And then the anxiety is just becoming kind of like a teapot. It's just getting louder and louder and stronger and scarier. And then I hear this voice in my head go, well, this is what we wanted to talk about, right? And it's not my voice either. And it's saying like, yeah, so what's this feeling? And I start, you know, probably talking out loud going, I don't know what this feeling is. And it was like a amplifier, right? That mm-hmm. like you take the dial and just like crank it up to, you know, a couple more, and it goes, is this what you're feeling? You know, and I'm more and more and more and more frightened. It's everything I feel for like 20 seconds, and it feels like it's been going on for, like, I feel like a part of Manchurian Candidate or Clockwork Orange or whatever. I mean, just, I am very uncomfortable. And so this little narrator in my head is going, this is what we want to talk about. And then it asked me to take another drink. So take another drink. I feel nothing. And they go, and that makes you feel better? We want to talk about that. And I'm getting lectured at by myself. And the whole trip is like turning on me. And it was absolutely one of the most life-changing, beautiful experiences of my life, because I was realizing all these things that I cope on, you know, or I used to cope. What's the correct phrase? I cope through or cope with. And just how, you know, how false they are and how empty it is. And also I'm wanting to still drink too. So part of this is not like I want to wake up and never have a drink anymore.
Sure.
But I wanted basically also to understand what alcohol was and figure out this pot thing. But I'm also on really, really pure acid that I haven't had in like maybe 12 years.
Yeah.
So it's effectively the first time, just as strong as the very first time you ever take acid. And so I decide, well, okay, fuck it. I'm just going to, Jesus. And I'm like freaking out. And I remember that my wife is sleeping. So, I didn't want her to stick around and babysit me, but I wanted to know that she was in the house. So I open the door and I hear just one breath from her while she's sleeping, and everything just like, whew, calms down.
Aww.
Feels, yeah. It was like one human breath, right? How's that for a Cat Stevens lyric? But like one human breath.
Smart ass.
one noodle. It just took one of those egg bite noodles. And I'm just like calm. I'm like, okay, good. Okay. Huge life epiphany, the power of life, right? One breath, you know, the woman I love. Oh my God. Yeah. I, you know, that heartbeat, you know? So I'm like, okay, well, just take a shower. Yeah. You're going through this. You're basically getting your money's worth. I'm telling myself you're getting the night's worth. And, so And I'm hoping you you edit this for time too. I don't even know how far we are into this, but
we're in an hour. I don't edit for time.
Okay,
so.
Good. You said okay, good. We're in the window. So I went and decided that that I'm going to take a shower. And I go into the shower and I'm looking around while the shower is getting warm, and the acid is still like. You know, we're probably 7 or 8 hours in. He's still having a great time with me. Like the radiator is everything was smiling or reconfiguring itself. You know, I mean, it was very cliche, but also very beautiful. Yeah. And so I get into the shower and I'm having this wonderful time. I'm just sort of with the water. I don't want you. You make your joke. I was having a great time in the shower. And there's this this window that was in the shower stall, looking outside into the house outside, that isn't in our bathroom. And I remember looking out, and all the more cliche, seeing like a pyramid outside. You know, I mean, the proof of aliens, right, or something. Just appear in. Out this imaginary window that's very vivid and very real. And then I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. And so I look, turn away from it. And I'm hearing the water more and more and more and more and more to the point where I can hear and see every drop of water, right?
Yeah.
And every drop of water is becoming, the more I look at it, a tiny human. And each drop of water is sort of like a slave or a tiny little man, you know, working with a chain and creating the world, you know, and I kind of peer back and I see like millions of them, and then I peer in, I can focus on one, and I'm suddenly seeing, as it is the cliche, but also as one of the great life experiences, the dawn of man. Yeah. Sort of like I'm seeing inside the history of the world in the shower, and every raindrop is a human form creating and building the planet. And I'm seeing all this, and it's going. Like, basically, if you peer back, you see millions. You peer in, you see one, and thousands or so in between views. And they're developing clothes. They're Egyptians. They're Europeans. They're doing all this crazy world-making shit. And I'm just delighted because this is really, you know, they're swimming around me. If I turn around, I'm just, like, seeing them kind of, like, floating around me in, like, every cliche you could think.
Sure.
And, but it's fabulous. And the fidelity of the image was unbelievable. You know, I mean, that's the funny thing too. I mean, just when you're having that experience, the ability that your brain has to show you something with such detail is just insane, you know, and, or if you're actually receiving a transmission of some sort, a very funny side point is this, that same night I spoke, I'm convinced. Well, I didn't spoke with him. Maybe I did. But one of my safe, DVDs that I had was, was a Robert Anton Wilson, lecture. And that motherfucker had me so scared at one point. Talk about like recruiting the ultimate mind, you know, like a huge mind fucker.
Oh, this will be a great idea.
Yeah, this will be great. I don't exist. How perfect. What a great point. Thanks. Yeah, why do I feel my penis? I have no idea. You know, this guy's got it figured out.
That's deep.
But I will tell you this, that I woke up the next morning and I had this idea. This is God's truth. I had the idea then after this experience to work on The Realist, which I had only seen one or two issues of, and had no idea what it was really beyond that, and just sought out the project in full earnest. And it's basically the vehicle by which Robert Anton Wilson was published throughout the 50s and 60s. And I kind of think it was his idea to do it. And but that's totally total drug talk. But yeah, it's absolutely true. Yeah,
I get it. I absolutely get it.
Thank you. Thank you. So here is the crescendo. I got the world going around me. To recap, every water drop is a human. Every human is millions. I'm seeing everything, and they're going as it's swirling around me. It's getting closer and closer to modern day, and suddenly this book like appears in front of me. I mean, it's like a Joel Schumacher trip or something. This book glows in front of me. And it's the Book of Man, right? And it's like every page flips. I see the Bible. I know the whole Bible. I know the whole secret books. I know the whole Illuminati books. I'm just they're flipping down, and the books glow and disappear. And then I look down, and all my little workers in the shower with me are now modern day. And then they're going ahead modern day, and suddenly they're future people. And then I'm so disappointed in myself. They are the lizard people. And
I am delighted with the lizard people.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am so happy right now.
Yeah, it was basically a very significant experience mixed probably with a lot of
media. You had a lot of trope. That's what you had.
Yeah. Well, so here's what happened. Suddenly I looked down and all these people have suddenly turned into the sharpest glass spears aimed right at me. Uh-oh. And I'm just terrified. I am in the shower, basically feeling all these huge spears just like staring right at me, you know. And in what would become the only actual physical danger of the evening, I decide I got to get out of this. So I jump out of the shower. No telling how bad that can go. By the way, there's a lot of porcelain by the shower. There is a toilet. There's a basin. There's a sink. There's a wall. And I'm covered in water just jumping.
Did you have the beard?
I had the beard. And I'm painting a picture. I'm jumping from spears. I have a photo from the night.
Buck naked, bearded.
Yeah. But I slam on the light. I somehow have like a gymnastic ability to jump from these spears onto the floor, and I slam on the light, and it just becomes the whole room just becomes a fauna, like a covered green, beautiful tropical space filled with birds and peace and calm. And it was just immediate, you know. And I suddenly hear that voice again that asked me like an hour or two ago, probably in real time, how long I've been taking the story to tell, but I hear this voice that tells me, well, you passed.
Oh,
yeah. Isn't that nice? Very nice. Being a man, all this bar mitzvah shit. And, I just coasted through the rest. It was one of the most severely life affecting moments where I literally felt like I'd survived something and that I had, and the rest of the night was just this beautiful sort of conversation with myself, just sort of addressing all the problems I wanted to deal with. Ended up being awake, probably for like 48, 50 hours, just based on the adrenaline from the experience. And
fuck yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I remember going out and get these incredible tacos, looking down and seeing this wonderful trinket on the ground that I just decided was my acid test metal. And, or not decided, it was my acid test metal. You know, yeah. I was, you know, I had the top, they were my acid
this
test tacos.
This belongs to me. Hakuna Matata.
Yeah. Yeah. So I taped it on a book and, you know, it was just a fantastic experience. And I really did figure out my drinking.
Would have been my follow-up question.
Yeah, I 10 years later, I'm down. You know, I have a complete. My success is moderation, not abstinence or whatever. Sure. So I do. I abstain 4 nights, and drink 3 nights. So I get 1 weekday that I can pick, but it's best if I'm consistent with it. And then Friday and Saturday, I usually just unscrew my skull, and you know, go full out. But
moderation as a measurement of volume as opposed to.
Well, no, but I mean, but it's also allowing, you know, 4 days. 4 days
I'm
is a
totally
lot.
With you.
Yeah, no, it totally works. Don't break me up. Don't make this. And I told Jeff, and now I don't know what the fuck to do. No, it totally works for me.
It does. But no, I have had a moment of clarity, not nearly as cool as what you just had.
Oh, well, it's my acid story.
Yeah, that got me to quit drinking. In excess, and I'm almost 18 years now, 17 years, of maybe 2-3 drinks a month, perhaps.
Wow. That's terrific.
Yeah. And that was just,
That's amazing. Is it casseroles that you were talking about? Yeah. Are you putting it into food?
No, I wish. I don't know what the hell I put it into anymore. hanging out with my kids, I guess. No, it's I was working at Skyline. It was after Ken Walters had left, and it was after I broke my neck.
That can do it.
Yeah.
You didn't get into pain meds or anything like that. I remember you breaking your, wow.
I tried really hard not to get hooked on pain meds.
Yeah.
I was very, very frightened of narcotics.
Yeah.
But I also had this huge chip on my shoulder that I had been proven by consequence, by coincidence, to be mortal. And at that right. particular part of my existence, that didn't fit. Nate and I, the night right. I had the accident, had gotten into a bit of a tiff. I had gone down and signed my papers to join the Marine Corps. And he was mad at me, and he told me he didn't want to be my friend if I was going to go off to other countries and kill brown skin people. And I tried to explain to him.
Is that really what he said?
It was pretty close.
I mean, life is such a Dawson's Creek moment when you're that young, you know?
Yeah.
But
I was ready to go. I wanted to fly helicopters. Yeah. The military has helicopters.
Yeah. I mean, I validate the anti-war sentiment. I'll say that to Nate's point. And I can see your point of like sort of social discovery and playing Grand Theft Auto in real life.
Yeah.
So there
it's like, I don't want to go to war, but I sure shit want to fly an Apache helicopter. So
right.
the only way to do that is to do this. You know, it's 6 years. Fuck it. You know, I'll live forever. And yeah, it was 2:30 in the morning. And ironically, and I will staple an ironic to this.
do you have like an ironic sound effect you can put in?
I don't. I wish I did. But it was we had what got the argument over with so that we could move on with our day was we watched Damon Wayans' Major Pain. It was a terrible Marine Corps comedy.
It's a parody. I'm not familiar with. Wait,
it was awful. It was just fucking awful. It was like the worst movie ever.
Are you blaming like the Wayans brothers for what's about to happen?
No. It was just, he's like, you're going to join the Marines. We're not going to be friends. Cause I,
right.
you know, bloodthirsty, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, that's stupid. I just want to fly helicopters. But all right. Drama queen. So
did you guys hug it out or anything?
We did. And so we were at the video store and that just happened to be something he picked. And the next thing you know, we're watching this ridiculously bad movie. We laughed. I took him home. I went to Good right. Times. I got a double bacon.
Good.
And spicy fries.
Very good.
And then got hit by a truck.
What kind of ketchup did you get with that?
I don't even remember. But yeah, okay. And so I got hit by a truck. Well, you know, wow. blah, blah, flash forward about a year. I'm trying to prove I'm still a man.
Wow.
And I've got some serious PTSD going on. Probably now that I look back, some traumatic brain injury stuff I was working through because, you know, much like gluten, we didn't know what the fuck that was. So
wait, we didn't know what PTSD was or what
traumatic brain injury.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, you got a concussion, you don't sleep for a day and then you move on with your life.
Right.
And,
and you were, and am I remembering that you were a bouncer at one point too? Or
yeah, this was that.
Okay.
I was doing bodyguard work before I got hurt. And then I went to pretty much the most dangerous bar in Denver to prove to myself that I wasn't afraid because I was terrified.
Yeah.
Every fucking minute I was there, I was just scared to death. So I was drinking lots and lots of Southern Comfort because I also am given to cliche.
Oh yeah. No, that was actually the bourbon that I learned to drink bourbon with, that and Dr. Pepper as a chaser, which is,
These days that I drink a good single malt scotch from time to time.
Yeah. I don't understand scotch. Scotch tastes to me, but I think it's because I don't like Irish whiskey.
Yeah.
So scotch to me basically tastes exactly like what bourbon left in your glass overnight with a bunch of ice cubes. It tastes like watered down nothing.
One day it tasted good.
Yeah.
Up until that, it was a fucking affectation.
Yeah. Nate posts those like ridiculous scotch porn
Yeah, he sends me bottles from time to time.
Oh, thanks, Nate. Thanks for the bottle that I've never gotten.
No. It's like little like 2 ounce sample bottles that I'm pretty sure his wife had essential oils in a couple of days before.
Or you hope it wasn't Nate's essential oils, because
it's anti-itch hemorrhoidal cream. So, yeah. And so I'm sitting at the bar one night, and you know me, I had a very low tolerance for annoying people.
Yeah.
And
you were great.
So that was why I was a great bouncer. Is I just loved beating the hell out of the most annoying people. And So I'm at the bar. It's like 4 a.m. One of the bartenders is passed out in the kitchen. One of the bar backs is humping one of the waitresses over on a table. I'm sitting at the corner trying to map out the plot of a story I'm working on.
Right.
I'm about a 6-pack of Rolling Rock and a half a bottle of Southern Comfort into 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And this little voice in the back of my head's like, you know, right this minute, you are acting like every asshole you like to beat up. And I went, I got to quit drinking this much.
Wow.
Caught a cab, went home. Huh. And after, it was just that. It was just like, you're being an asshole. But not in a way that's entertaining.
Amazing. You know, the power of the internal voice.
Sometimes the internal voice is an asshole and gets me in trouble.
Sure.
So, but okay.
It was probably the one who said, you should move to Utah.
Fuck. You know what? You do, man. You run. It was a bad breakup. There was a bad breakup that ran me back here. And then I managed to escape. And it was another bad breakup that brought me back here, because there's something comforting in digging into the dirt you knew as a kid. You know, it's like Nate right now, he's miserable in Minnesota. He's like, I'm thinking about going back to Denver. And it's like, you know, you don't get to do the shit we used to do.
Yeah.
The people that we hung out with aren't there anymore.
He's more Jewish gypsy than anyone I know.
Yeah. It's every reason you love it is not there anymore.
Well, there's a new reason to love Colorado, I should point out.
What's the marijuana?
Yeah, my gosh.
See, and I never liked pot.
They have a horrible name for it too.
What?
Well, you know how Oakland became Oaksterdam, which is kind of cute. Kind of cute. Denver's is painfully. I like it, but it's also painfully bad. It's Denver, so it's with the V still. So Demsterdam.
That's awful. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. They're on the right
side of the mountains, my friend. You are on the wrong side of the mountain.
Yeah, I am. And not for me, not because of pot, because like I said, I never liked it.
Well, I could tell you that there's an incredible ROTC program in Texas if you want, you know, or the reserves or anything. You know, you can continue killing brown-skinned people in Texas.
I never wanted to kill anybody. I just wanted to blow shit up.
Yeah.
It's a pyromaniac, not a psychotic.
So the internal voice tells you, you know, it doesn't criticize you for drinking Rolling Rock and Southern Comfort.
It didn't know better at the time.
Okay, good. Because I don't even know how that adds up to being alcohol on either on either level. I don't know how that's a beer or what. But
well, it's like what? It's like I said, now that I drink scotch, Southern Comfort's like something you put on a fucking pancake.
Yeah, that's funny. You know what? That's very funny. You know what I love about Rolling Rock? It's so rolling. I mean, the it's such piss beer that you actually don't see beer through the bottle. That green bottle, it doesn't change the color of the bottle.
No. But I never liked
look
beer.
Look at it next time.
I liked ridiculously gourmet shit. I liked Hefeweizen. I like my favorite beer to this day is still.
You like Newcastle, right?
Love Newcastle.
Yeah, I know that.
And that was one thing my brother's bar had. They had Newcastle on tap.
Man, we're drawing a fucking circle on the story. This is amazing.
Yeah.
This is incredible.
All right, I got to give you an acid story, and then I got to go put my kids to bed.
Very good, very good. This has been a fun conversation.
It has been. Now, I don't have anything as deep as you just had.
Oh, well, you know, I was stacking the bets against myself. I knew I had that story.
Yeah.
So that's amazing.
But I'll tell you, I think one of the reasons why, and here's where I'll try and find some depth. I'm going to fail, but I'm going to give it a shot.
If you do, I'm going to call you Johnny Depth.
That's very good. I like
you're
that.
You're able to get it. Yeah.
That's very witty.
You'll become very pretty.
I wish.
You'll date French lesbians. Yeah.
You'll be being Nate without the oblivious of the girls that liked him.
Yeah.
So,
oh my gosh.
I have, since a very early age, suffered from chronic headaches. Nasty headaches. It's probably one of the reasons I was grumpy my whole life. And as you probably recall from reading and studying, is that one of the things that the process that accidentally discovered LSD was going into was a cure for migraines.
Albert Goldman was doing that. Is it Goldman or Hoffman? Hoffman. He was doing that. I didn't know that.
He was working on that. That was, Hoffman, Albert Hoffman.
Yeah. Hoffman.
And so he was working on a headache cure, aspirin plus. And so
did you ever try any, is this a migraine or just like a tension headache?
Oh, no, I get severe migraines, and ever since I broke my neck, they get even worse.
Wow.
So every day is just stupid.
And you got kids.
You know what? This sounds like bullshit, but it's just kind of how I had to rewire my life. And that is, I realize where I'm at, I reset normal, and then I can function. And I know other people that have some chronic pain, and it's not a judgment. I'm no better or worse than anybody. I've just learned how to cope. Some people, you know, they never learn how to reset those boundaries. And it's, you know, it's water off a duck's back for me. I'm really good at adapting to shitty situations, just moving forward.
Yeah, so, I think actually, if you were to ever move to a more liberal or, you know, whatever you want to call it, town, you would feel very, you would probably develop a, you would probably try and alienate yourself from that community, because I think that you probably really like being a struggling, or you like being in the liberal community that has to struggle to be itself, because it, you know, it's both unpleasant and kind of,
yeah, but it's gone a little too far here. I want to take it back a couple steps. So I wouldn't mind a little bit of a fight.
Do you have like a parole officer or anything that's saying you can't?
It's not, you know what? It's money and family.
I'm totally about it. I should not tease you. I'm sorry.
No. Tease me. I live in Utah. I got it coming. You know, you live in the one part of Texas that makes it so I don't want Texas to secede.
Yeah. Well, you know, my joke about Austin, this is a bad joke, but it's the only city in the world that's surrounded by Texas.
Okay.
Thank you for laughing at that. I didn't know it was a
That is
joke,
beautiful. Like, I fucking love it. Because I'm always like, we got to build a wall around Austin and build a land bridge in from Oklahoma. Yeah.
Well, Denton is supposed to be okay. And actually, Marfa is terrific. And there's some border town areas. I mean, I could go into tour guide on you. There are parts of Texas that are fantastic. But it is...
Don't go to tour guide. We're at almost at 90 minutes.
Oh, well, shit. Okay, I'll send you a brochure. Continue on with your...
But we could do this again.
I would love it. I would love it.
This show begs repeats. So,
please. Yeah.
I'll give you the burrito story. I was going to give you the time I sold myself into slavery to buy acid.
A quick segue. I was worried while I was coming out of it, and I still had 10 hits. I never did anymore. But I was convinced, like, one is inclined to. You know, I need hundreds of these. I need to stockpile. While I was still going through, I was convinced that I needed to get a lot of acid. And so I had this horrifying thought that the people who helped me would suddenly become my pimps. Like I actually viewed it as like crack or something, where I was like, man, I'm going to have to suck cock for, for tabs or for dose. But anyway, it didn't happen. But I'm interrupting.
You know, any drug, everybody's got to have a hobby.
Yeah, everything's a Lifetime movie. So, I could deal with the burrito story or the white slavery.
Okay, I'm gonna ask.
It'd really be a ginger slavery story, but no, okay.
It would be. I'm gonna ask for 2 seconds because if I don't run and pee, I'm gonna pee myself.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
I'll be right back.
All right, very good. We're waiting now for Jeff Bell to use the toilet. We're waiting now for Jeff Bell to use the toilet. Please hold. It's really serene. The quiet on the other end of the line. seems like such a peaceful place. I don't know why he's so upset about living in Utah. It just sounds like the nicest place in the world. Just listen to that quiet. Even the toilet sounds quiet. I tell you. The silence really seems like it's listening, too. It's nice. Like it cares about me in a really good way. I didn't feel as cared about by Jeff as I do by the silence, the toilet silence.
I don't know what you said, and I can't wait to listen to it. Okay, so
I didn't say nothing. I was talking about the toilet.
I'm going to give you burritos. I swear to God, I'll tell you about the slavery some other time, because that's got a lot of laughter and sex.
Please, yeah.
But no, so I was about 17 years old. I was down in Price, Utah, going to school, College of Eastern Utah. It was one of those weird schools that was in a transition from being a mining technical college to the sort of almost like the junior college, the liberal arts college. Had a great theater department, had an amazing debate team, had a girl named Mariah. Yeah, there's always a reason I go somewhere.
You go for Mariah's? That's kind of your thing?
She was the reason I went there. I went to Minnesota for an Emily. I learned to love pasta salad for a Megan.
It's what I'm hearing is actually M. If there's M in a girl's name.
Well, no, because I learned to love Cat Stevens for...
That's what the M is in JM.
Could be. But I love to learn Cat Stevens for a Kiri, and there's no M in that name.
How about you can make an M out of that?
I'll have to find one. Maybe she has a middle name. Maybe Mira.
Yeah, her middle name starts with an M.
Sure. So I do... I'm used to, at this point, drinking Boone's Mountain Berry. And... Because that's, you know, it's what you drink in the desert when you're 17 years old and everybody else that you hang out with is 3 or 4 years older than you. Uh-huh. And
they're drinking Boone's and you want to look cool.
Well, right? No, that was just what was available because it was the junior liberal college.
Yeah.
From time to time when I had the money, I would drink Usher's Green Stripe, which is where I started drinking scotch. Well, okay. You know, as close to scotch as you can be and not be. And so one day this kid that I adore, and so I won't say his name here, let's call him, Cody, says,
wait, there is a Cody from Denver. Is this Cody from Denver?
Nah, this is Utah still.
Okay.
And he says to me, hey, do you want to do some LSD? I said, I don't know what that is.
Oh, this is your first trip story.
Yeah.
Oh, those are good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he says, it's acid. And I said, I don't know what that is. And he's like, right. Here, eat this. And I said, okay. An hour later.
That's set and setting if they've ever described it right there. I got it.
Well, just eat this.
Yeah.
An hour later, I have reached transcendence.
Mm.
I am tucked into a corner of a couch. I'm playing guitar better than I have ever played it before. And this ended up setting up a theme for almost every other time I took it throughout my life. And why, like you said, you went through these elaborate preparations.
Oh, yeah, Party City.
Yeah, all I had to do was just sit down and play guitar.
Oh, you're bragging?
No, because you you had this beautiful, life-changing thing. I had bloody fingers.
Oh, sure. No. Mine was the midlife crisis. I was 30 and I needed to set the setting. That wasn't the first time I did acid. Come on.
No. Yeah. But
that was basically, like when you're 12, when you're 15 or 20 and you're moving to a town, you just need a duffel bag. When you're 30 and you're moving, you spend like all, 2 months packing.
Yeah.
So that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no,
don't get me wrong.
I need to have
that kind of a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
But, there I am. I'm playing guitar. We got this neat little kid from Hong Kong that lives in one of the rooms in the apartment we're hanging out at. And I'm starting to get a little paranoid because we're in student housing.
Wait, you had a Korean woman in your experience
as well? No, he was a Chinese kid.
In Utah.
In Utah. He was an exchange student. He was a foreign student at this itty-bitty school in the middle of the fucking desert.
Imagined or real?
No, he was real.
Oh, okay.
There was it was a college apartment, and it had four rooms, and then a central living room, and then a kitchen. And right. there were, like, I think 12 of these in each of the student housing buildings. Now, I, because I'm badass, was renting a single wide trailer on the other side of town, which, honest to God, you could walk to in 8 minutes. This town was so small.
So you can rent a trailer in this town.
Yeah. There was a trailer park, and it had a bunch of trailers for rent to the college kids. And
is that
so,
common? Can you generally rent a trailer? Because every time I've had like a trailer ambition,
yeah,
I've always thought that there's a heavy investment there that I got to buy a trailer. But can you generally rent a trailer in your experience?
I have no idea.
You were, though, able in this experience.
I did. I lived with two girls and me, and we all lived in this little these rooms were tiny, but we all lived in the trailer, and that was where it's like if somebody wanted to smoke up or somebody wanted to trip, they'd come out to the trailer. And if we were going to drink, we'd just stay on campus because nobody gave a shit.
Got it.
And so we were on campus, and the kid from Hong Kong, I can't remember his name, and I feel bad because I really liked him, even though he spoke almost no English.
Yeah. Well, the kid from Hong Kong, you know.
Yeah.
That's not an insulting name or title or anything. So.
The only reason he's in the story is because his parents had sent him a bottle of vitamin C that was these tiny little pearl-sized chewable pills.
Right.
And the bottle they sent was 2 feet tall and about as big around, you know, as a tree stump. It was huge.
Now, are you segueing into the same myth that I talked about, the vitamin C myth with acid, or is this just because, or not?
At that time, somebody had told me that, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder where that's like the banana leaf that you smoke. I don't know any rationale, like, for why vitamin C is said to.
All I know is that if you take enough vitamin C, you get really sick.
Oh, my God, yeah, yeah. Try a case of Sunny Delight, my friend.
Yeah. I remember that. So anyway, we end up somehow walking out to my place, and outside of the
hold on, I'm so sorry, hold on.
Okay.
Cats. Yeah, I know. You're on the podcast, huh? They make very cute noises when they're hungry. Yeah, I guess. There we go. All right. Okay. So
they sound adorable.
Yeah, they're my life. They absolutely, I adore them. So, kid from Hong Kong with the wacky pack of pills.
So we stole his jar of vitamin C. And at this point, we are maybe a week into school, and the dude doesn't even know us. And we're just like, vitamin C. We grab it. We run.
That's so terrible.
Not forgetting that three of us, not me, but the other three guys that I'm with, all live in that apartment with this one dude.
What if he had a chronic cold or something?
I don't know. He ended up being a friend, but we did have to pay him back. I think we paid him back in stolen Subway sandwiches.
Nice.
So we all go out to my trailer, and we're there for hours. And I honestly have very little memory of it other than everything seemed really important.
And this was the night that somebody said, hey, have some acid, open your mouth.
Yeah.
And then you played the guitar. So this is the same evening.
Yeah, I played guitar for maybe 2 hours, and then we walked out to the getting deep into the guitar and playing and playing and playing didn't happen until I got to Denver. But this was because I'd only been playing a few months at this point. But
yeah.
So I get hungry. Now, I am dirt-ass broke. I have maybe 80 cents to my name. And I know this for a fact. So I go, okay, I've got enough. This will tell you how long ago it was. I've got enough for probably a candy bar. So I walk over to the gas station across the highway from my trailer park. It takes me 3 weeks to get there, as you might recall.
Was this a detail in the story earlier?
It felt like it took for fucking ever.
Okay.
It's maybe 200 yards. And it took me a week to get there.
Yeah,
I walk in, and
a week
I am,
or 3 weeks. What is it, Jeff?
It's, I don't remember. It's all transcendent. Man. It's all squishy.
You're such liquid. You're a flip-flopper.
Yeah. So I get... Dick. So I get there. I'm convinced the girl knows exactly why I'm weird. She has to. What I remember is walking over to the burritos. I remember putting one burrito into the microwave oven. And then I remember walking to the counter saying something, good evening.
As though
I am in complete control. Paying the woman in cash. Now remember, I had 80 cents.
Yeah.
I paid her in paper money. And then I walked back to my...
You probably paid her in napkins.
Who knows?
Yeah.
I still don't know. So I walked back to the trailer, and from the pockets of my jacket come about, I think it was 7 burritos. All magma hot.
Yeah.
And I'm pulling them out. Like, what?
They're all frozen, right? Or had you individually?
I had individually microwaved each and every one of them.
Oh, God, that's hot.
And then just put them in my pockets.
You know, there's only one setting on that microwave in that food mart, too. It's never sort of like a gradual sort of semi-heat. Yeah. It's, third degree burn heat is the only setting. You press a one, you know. So I'm sure you could have died.
Yeah, thank God it was a leather jacket. But yeah, suddenly here I have.
I just see you walking in and her just freezing, you know. I mean, you're probably like some gorilla of a drug-raised, you know, bizarre creature just walking, grunting, picking up all the burritos, waiting, though, 45 seconds there, whatever.
And every.
Ding, ding. Then going up, giving her some paper clips and a paper napkin to pay for it.
Can't imagine what the fuck I pulled out of my pocket. It obviously wasn't my ID.
You know what would be really funny is if you paid her in burritos.
Here you are, my fine lady.
The finest of the Reese's held this bag of a warmed up burrito, this flaccid, dripping, overly hot burrito.
Yeah.
Man, well, that's good.
So I get up, I guess it was 2 days later, you know, because
you
take it, you've invested at least 24, probably 36 hours.
Yeah, this 8 to 12 hour idea is bullshit. I don't know
how many times I convinced myself I'd be just fine. I got to be somewhere in 12 hours. Yeah, I'll just take a little.
Yeah.
Does that happen several times? Now, the next day I woke up, I felt... just greasy and sandy and wrong. However, it was the first day in years I didn't have a headache. And my headache stayed away for about 10 days.
I totally believe that.
And that right there started, for me, this turned into aspirin I tried to get my hands on as often as I could. Now, in Utah, it was fucking impossible. When I got out to Denver for a little while, it felt impossible. Everybody wanted to give me pot. And like I said, I've never enjoyed being high. I would just take it to mellow. And that was the nice thing because I mean, you know, me and a few of the guys were, and one we know together whose name I won't say at this point. We were playing in a band, and that's how we were making our money. When we weren't doing that, we were busboys at some dipshit restaurant on Colfax. And so we just had enough
that
you could take 3 days and just sit out on the porch at 2 p.m, watch the clouds until it rained at 4, watch the rain until 4:15 when it stopped.
You're bringing it right back again. This is amazing. This is perfect.
And that was, you know, and that was my life for about almost 4 years was just at least once a week, you know, was dropping a tab of acid. And it turned into a 7-year chunk of my life where I didn't have a headache.
I totally believe you.
Yeah.
I mean,
bliss. And, you know, I was tripping balls, so that was cool,
too. Yeah, well, I mean, you can probably perceive some sort of real holistic idea about getting away from what you think about and stuff like that. You could probably achieve that through meditation or some other hippie crap if you wanted to rediscover that headache. But I bet also there was a part of you, with the personality that you are, that headache that finally appeared, you were probably like, thank God it's back. Maybe. But you're very quiet on the other end there, so maybe
I don't know. You know what? The headaches I don't like. I've had them since I was a kid. They're just, yeah. I fucking hate them. And so that was.
Well, you should do some of that meditation. I don't have time. Kombucha.
I neither have the calmness nor the time. Is really what it comes down to.
Well, maybe the headache is actually congested consciousness.
Like, I think now the headache's got a lot to do with arthritis, where I broke my neck.
But so no, that's very. I don't want to laugh at war at a military injury, but don't make that a soundbite. But but let me tell you about military injury. But no, but well, I mean, that's fabulous that you were able to enjoy a carnival supply of burritos and no headache and yeah. You know. I'd love that. I love that you paid in money too. I would
like to find that girl and find out just what the hell happened from her point of view. I will never know, and I will always want to know.
And this is pre-video too, right? I am so glad that there is no record. My entire record of high school and early college is spoken word.
Yeah.
There are maybe like 6 photos that, you know, could be anything.
Yeah.
There's no document. You know, and
part of me is very grateful for that. And part of me remembers that I was fucking beautiful back then.
Oh, you were. You were a very gorgeous man.
So I would like some photographic evidence, you know, other than the 4 pictures I have, one of which I'm going to have a flat top and Jason's grabbing my boob. So
I think I got one. It might even be time stamped, too. Wow. I could look for a gorgeous picture. It might be in my gorgeous jar or my gorgeous box.
You know what? I want to do this again soon.
Please,
and I want
to
return to this topic because I want to talk about the night of the noodles and how that night ended.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
But
I have...
it's 10 o'clock where you are. It's 9 o'clock where I am.
Yeah, I probably need to go. This has been a delight. I want to hear this. You've been recording, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I'm going to set it to compress when I go upstairs, and then I'll just package it, and it'll be out tomorrow morning.
Oh, my God. Oh, no edit? Nothing?
I might edit out the part where I pee, depending on how funny you are while I was away from the microphone.
Well, the beginning is choppy. It would have been better if you were starting right with the gun. But no, that's... Oh, yeah. Let's do it. That'll be funny. This has been a delight. I would love to do another one. This was fun as hell.
All right. Well, you hang on the line really quick while I tell you goodbye, and then they'll think we hung up, and then I can say a little bit more with you and I.
Okay, that's good.
But
okay.
Thank you, Ethan. And if you, ladies and gentlemen, really want to see, now you be quiet for a sec.
Oh, sure.
Honest to God, some fucking mind-expanding stuff. www.ep.tc. It'll
very
be linked
good.
On the website.
Yeah,
for those of you that are getting this through the RSS feeds, go through and listen to some of this Radio Hour stuff. I listened to it today.
Thank you. That's nice.
And it's the player you have at the top of the page repeats. It just goes on and on.
Yeah.
And
I
must have listened
that.
To it at work for about 3 hours. And you've only got about, what, 9-10 minutes of stuff?
Yeah, that's about it. I got more. I mean, but, you know. Yeah,
more coming.
Basically 3 minutes a week is what I'm doing. Until
I wasn't kidding either, though, when I said that Groucho Marx thing scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's all real.
I know. That's it. Now I will share my last love before I stop recording. And that is something that's in I don't know what you call the male version of a hope chest, but it's my box with drawers of special shit. And I have 2 copies of a certain Tijuana Bible in which John McCain and George W. Bush have sexual congress with one another.
Yeah, and John McCain has really beautiful breasts, and Yeah, I mean, you pretty much described it. Yeah, that's a, it was billed at the time as the oldest known John McCain memorabilia. The copies you have are reproductions of the actual Bible, which dates to 1934.
Sure.
And at the time I found it, it was the oldest known, but it, I've since found some sheet music from 1918 that's also on the website called My Fellow Prisoners, a song John McCain wrote back there. But yeah, the Bible was a great, that was what we found when we, what I had with me when I reconnected with you in Denver in 2008. Yeah.
Honest to God, that was that was the highlight of my trip out to Denver. The second
I should do a plug here. That was co-done with a great friend and extremely talented collaborator and just life friend of mine. I've known Scott for more than 20 years, Scott Marshall did. He and I did the Tijuana Bible, and he also does some incredible art on a biography I'm working on an underground reporter named John Wilcock, mm-hmm. which is also on the site. Mm-hmm. It's all over the stuff. You should check out the site. But Scott is among one of the most talented people I know and one of my closest friends, and working on that Tijuana Bible with him was a dirty, dirty joy.
I'll bet.
Yeah.
It's www.ep.tc.
That's correct. Yeah, the shortest website you can get, but also the hardest one to apparently remember.
Well, you know what? You don't throw the W's in with a website that short. People don't know what the fuck.
Yeah, no, you go.
About.
I think if you wanted to be street hip, you would be like dub. What do they go?
Three
trip dub. Trip dub.
Yeah, fuck those kids.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's pronounced trip dub eptuk.
Eptuk.
Really want to. Eptic. Yeah, I that's a horrible joke to leave on, Jeff, this was terrific. So, I will say goodnight to you, and thank you so much for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you.
This was yes.
Fun. I'm hanging.
Burritos. Burritos. Bags. I'm buying you a burrito jacket.